welcome to episode 680 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This episode is a spotlight on Uncanny X-Men number 9. It's the penultimate issue of the weekly event, X-Men Disassembled, where we've seen the former X-Men, X-Man, Nate Gray, who first showed up in the Age of Apocalypse storyline, come back to the Marvel 616 Prime Universe and attempt to basically take it over to usher in a new age of peace, apparently. He's dying and he wants to leave that as his legacy for mutants and humans to live in harmony, but he's going about it completely the wrong way. He doesn't care who suffers in the meantime. For him, the end justifies the means, and the X-Men have been unable to stop him. So recently we saw that Legion, the son of Charles Xavier, the extremely powerful Omega-level mutant, trapped some of the X-Men and Nate Gray within his mind, convincing them that they had been transported to the Age of Apocalypse reality. The Age of Apocalypse reality, where X-Man originally comes from, in that reality, he doesn't have the godlike level of power or abilities that he does in the Prime Marvel Universe. But unfortunately, when Bishop transported himself there, when he had Psylocke send him there, actually, to rescue the younger X-Men, when he didn't change appearances, that's when Nate Gray realized that this wasn't the actual reality of the X-Men Age of Apocalypse. He then realized he was just trapped within Legion's mind, basically. And we saw that Cable was able to bring back those younger X-Men that were trapped there and basically left X-Man and Legion to sort of fight it out over control of Legion's mind. So, as we start issue 9, as I said, the next to last issue, it's written by Matthew Rosenberg, Kelly Thompson, and Ed Brisson. We have art by Ildere Sinar, colors by Rochelle Rosenberg, and letters by Joe Caramagna. And just like I said last time, we saw at the very end of issue 8, Legion speaking in a voice that did not sound like him. He had the glowing eye that X-Man usually had, and he had the tattoo on his chest that X-Man usually had. Took that as a bad sign. Took that as a sign that Nate Gray had won that battle of wills and has basically taken over Legion's body and Legion's mental abilities at this point. So issue 9 opens up with Legion standing there. And again, I've got to believe this is Nate Gray. And he's saying, did you think that would work? Did you think that you could contain me inside Legion's mind? That you could send me to the Age of Apocalypse and just leave me there? And not just me, but children, your own students, left us there to die in that place. You know, I really tried. I tried so hard to give you people what you wanted. I tried to shape the world into something that could be better. And for that, you tried to destroy me? I tried to work with you, X-Men. And Jamie Madrox is saying, what's going on? Why does Legion sound like that? And when did he get a tattoo? And Northstar is like, that's Nathan, you idiot. We tried to trap him in Legion's mind, which actually it was Legion that made that choice. It wasn't the X-Men who ever decided to try that. But he goes on to say, he's too powerful. He's taken over Legion's mind. And Iceman says, oh, great. An Omega-level mutant in the driver's seat of another Omega-level mutant. That sounds great. And then we see that Jamie Madrox is flying through the air. X-Man is basically using his telekinesis to draw him in, and he's saying the truth is that he doesn't even actually need the X-Men. He'll do this all on his own. And Kitty Pryde is telling him, don't do this, Nate. Jamie Madrox is asking for some help. Kitty's again trying to reason with X-Men, saying, let him go. We can talk about this. No one needs to get hurt. And Nate's response to that is, you tried to kill me. And Jamie again, hey, you know, this guy, he's got a crazy tight grip, guys. Come on, help me out. And X-Men saying, I don't need you anymore. I saw, now that I'm in Legion's mind, I saw what Legion did with Jamie, how he created thousands and thousands of him. It's like, all I need are soldiers. All I need are Jamie and his duplicates. And he whacks Jamie in the face. Nothing happens. There's no duplicate. And X-Men's kind of confused for a second. Why isn't he duplicating? And we get a whack. whack, 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 whack. He just starts punching him in the face as fast as he can. It's actually a pretty funny image. And finally, Jamie says, stop it, you moron. It won't work because I'm not Jamie Prime. When we got here, he took one look at what was happening, jumped in a rowboat, and got the hell out of here. He's probably stopped off at the first bar he found on the mainland, and he's getting smashed out of his mind. Surprise! And X-Men's like, enough of this, and disintegrates that duplicate of Jamie. And Storm and Kitty exchange a look with them, saying, you know, I never really thought I'd be grateful for Jamie Madrox's incompetence. Kitty says, yeah, who knew that being a coward could pay off? So instead, X-Man basically summons his Horsemen of Salvation, kind of giving them a recharge. We see lightning enveloping Omega Red, Blob, and Magneto, and their eyes glowing. And unfortunately, to replace Archangel, who was able to be freed from the control of X-Man, we see that Nate Grey chooses Storm as a replacement, and she immediately attacks Kitty Pryde. So as the X-Men start to fight the Horsemen, Psylocke goes right for Nate Grey in the body of Legion, and Jean's telling her, no, you're not going to be able to attack them on your own. And sure enough, Legion, or X-Man and Legion's body, just gives kind of a flick of the wrist, if you will, and sends Psylocke flying. And X-Man is saying, you know, you haven't even seen what I'm capable of yet. I've been patient. I've been benevolent. I'm just trying to find a world where humans and mutants can live in peace. But I see that's not possible now. Not the kind of peace that you want, because the X-Men are always so eager to cut off their noses just to spite their face. The only peace you people know is in chaos. And so you need to die knowing that you brought this on yourselves. You wouldn't let it happen. You wouldn't let me be. And now I'm going to destroy you. So as Jean goes to help Betsy get up, she's like, oh, we can't keep this up, right? We have them outnumbered, but they have us outpowered. Even though there's only five of them, their abilities are beyond what we can deal with. So Jean sends out a psychic call, saying, if you can hear this, we badly need your help for the fate of the world. And it's a really great image we get on the next page of Jean saying, to me, my X-Men. And in the background, we see just tons and tons of different mutants that have been X-Men over the years, from Forge to Darkstar to Sunfire, Strong Guy, Firestar, everybody, basically. Megan. Everybody who's ever been associated with the X-Men. So Jean then turns to Megan, to Pixie, saying, I need your help. I need you to do something important if we are to have any hope of winning this battle. And Pixie says, well, I can't teleport if that's what you are asking of me. And Jean says, X-Men's preventing you from teleporting? Pixie says, yeah, or at least I think so. And Jean says, okay, we need to split his focus and break his concentration. So we need a distraction, a big one. And she turns to Armor, who's standing there saying, Hisako. And Hisako says, hey, we volunteer. I've got a plan. We've got a plan. And Jean says, I don't know. Again, Jean constantly doubting this younger generation of X-Men. But Hisako's not deterred. She says, Jean, we can do this. And Jean says, okay, do it, but be careful, all of you. And I love Armor's response. I think careful has left the building, Jean. And we see her create her armor like she normally does, but this time it's much bigger. And it's in the shape of this rolling sphere with spikes on it. And it's big enough to not only contain Hisako herself, but also Rockslide and Glob. And as the ball starts rolling, Rockslide says, tell me the plan again. And Hisako says, I need you to fight with all you've got once I absorb them. You've got to protect me. And Glob says, wait, you're putting them in here with us? And she says, hell yes, I am. Well, and Rockslide says, well, anyway, nice knowing you guys. And they basically roll over the four Horsemen of Salvation, and they trap Omega Red, Magneto, Blob, and Storm in there with them. With Armor telling them, Glob, Rockslide, keep them off me as long as you can. And Storm's not happy to be trapped in there, saying, free us or die, children. So that, by Armor basically trapping the four Horsemen in that sphere with them, what she's done is she's allowed all the rest of the X-Men to all attack Legion at once. They're not divided in trying to fight the various horsemen, trying to fight Legion. They can all focus on fighting the X-Men possessed Legion. So Jean says, Pixie? And Pixie says, yeah, I feel it. He had to let me go. So Jean says, okay, we have to hurry. I don't know how long everybody can keep it up. I'll guide you. Do you see? And Pixie says yes as she starts to raise her fists and her power starts to kind of arc out around her. Meanwhile, back in the sub-basement of the Xavier Institute, Beast is asking Anole if he's ready to tell him why he gave the mutant vaccine away. And Anole says, I don't think you'd understand why, sir. And Beast says, try me. Did someone make you do it? And Anole, again, he tries to kind of deflect, saying, I don't know what to tell you, sir. And Beast says, don't lie to me. Tell me something that will justify this betrayal. Do you realize what you've done? This is only the beginning. This is the beginning of something I created to be used against us. You can never unring that bell. You have completely betrayed me. And Anole says, I know exactly what I've done. I've given some kid out there like me hope. I've made it possible for other kids like me to not have to become this, right? Because Anole, again, with the green skin and kind of the spikes on his head, he could never pass for human, not without some kind of piece of technology to disguise himself. And he goes on to say, yeah, monsters, outcasts, hunted, feared, alone. I've given them a chance. I've given them a choice I didn't have. And Beast, you know, he does seem to sort of understand. At least it seems like some of his anger is dissipated, but he says, you know, Victor, I understand all too well why you feel that way, but I'm afraid you've been naive. And if anyone of the original X-Men does understand, it's Beast, right? When he had that further mutation and grew the blue fur, he couldn't hide either. But unfortunately, what Beast believes is that he hasn't given mutants a choice. What he's done is he's given the government a weapon, right? Because it's not like when this vaccine is available from the government, they're just going to say, okay, get vaccinated if you want. No, it's going to be some kind of mandatory program. So Beast says, I can only begin to imagine how they'll use it against us. And the fact of the matter is you were hoping to give mutants freedom of choice, but really all you've done is shackle us. And before they can continue their conversation, Pixie shows up and says, you're needed, sir. Beast responds, they're ready, and they go with her. So back on the battlefield, Apocalypse is kind of watching from afar, thinking, wow, these ridiculous children playing with their toys. It's such a fruitless pursuit. And as he turns, he notices Senator Allen is trying to sort of escape the chaos. And Apocalypse says, you think to sneak away, little man. And Senator Allen says, hey, I just don't belong here. Let me go. And Apocalypse says, you know what? That's true. Truer words have never been spoken. And I do not just mean the X-Man's failed experiment that he called a council, where he was asking your opinion and my opinion and Kitty Pryde's opinion, because that didn't matter at all. And it's going to end in your pointless death. And Senator Allen says, no, please. And Apocalypse says, you know what? Really, you should thank me, because from the looks of what has succumbed at the hands of these spoiled grandchildren of the Atom, this is going to be quick and painless in comparison. So just as Apocalypse is about to smash Senator Allen to death, basically, Kitty Pryde shows up, tells him to hold his breath, and phases him through the ground and takes him far away from the battlefield. And when Kitty leaves him there and is about to go back to the battle, Allen wants to know, Why? You saved me after everything I said. And Kitty says, because we're X-Men, Senator. It's what we do. We're heroes for everyone. We don't discriminate. Meanwhile, inside the sphere, Armor and Glob and Rockslide have basically been overwhelmed at this point. Storm has Hisako at her mercy and says, are you willing to die for the X-Men? Because they've never cared about you. And in that moment, Armor allows her sphere to dissipate, and Storm says, well, I knew you were a smart girl. And so as X-Man gathers his horsemen to him, Jean says, Nate, it's over. It's time to end this. And X-Man's response is, well, those are very profound words, Mother. I could not agree more. and he literally starts to sink the continent that they're on. And the X-Men redouble their efforts, trying to stop him, firing all manner of their powers, Polaris and Bishop and everyone else firing at him. And Nate just, holds up his hand and holds it off like it's no big deal. And he says, you know what? The world rejected my teachings, and it made me question what I know to be true. But I see now that the problem was not with my wanting to save the world. The problem's the world itself. So I need to end all the problems at once. And Jean's trying to reach him again, saying, don't do this, Nate. We're your family. The X-Men are your family. Let us help you. And Nate says, the X-Men were my family, but you turned your back on me a long time ago, the same as you did to Legion. You got scared of us. We were too powerful. We were the next step, the grandchildren of the Atom. And just as humanity felt about you, that they didn't want mutants around, you felt that about us. You couldn't control us, and so you've treated us the same way humanity treats mutants. It's like there's now three factions. Humanity is prejudiced against mutants, and mutants are prejudiced against the next generation of mutants, your sons that are more powerful than you. You hate us, you fear us, and what you cannot control, you try to destroy. And I never understood my name. Like, why was it singular? Why was I called X-Man? But you've shown me. Because for me to exist, I have to be the last of the X-Men. I have to be that final incarnation of the dream of all mutants. I am the Omega. I am the End. And before I end, before I die, I've got to end the X-Men. And then we see a voice off panel saying, well, that's quite a soliloquy, but I think you missed something. If you want to beat the X-Men, you've got to beat us all. And we see that it's Beast saying that. And behind him, we see all the other X-Men that have been teleported in by Pixie. And they all look ready to attack X-Man and try to save the day. And we get the blurb at the bottom to be continued. So this issue's really fast-paced. It's basically one big fight. We only have one issue left to go. I don't know, even with all these other X-Men showing up, if it's going to be possible to defeat X-Man. He was powerful enough on his own. Now that he has the powers of Legion as well, it just seems like the X-Men are far outclassed. And it's interesting what X-Man says, right? He's saying that they abandoned them. They were too powerful. They feared them, just like, again, how humanity fears mutants. They've put that, the X-Men have put that on the next generation. They've put that on Legion. They've put that on Nate Gray. And in a way, he has a point. I know Charles Xavier tried to cure Legion and was unable to, and the solution is to lock him up in a cell on Muir Island and keep him doped up so he can't destroy the world. It's not an ideal solution. You can understand why Nate Gray and Legion would both feel betrayed. And there's gotta be a better way, to pull out an old cliche. And so what really can Jean say to that? Really, it's Professor X that should be the one confronted with that question. This isn't necessarily Jean Grey's doing or Kitty Pryde's doing. It's much more of a systemic sort of situation. And you can kind of draw parallels to it, to what Enole did, what Victor did in giving the vaccine, the mutant gene vaccine, the X gene vaccine to the government. Right, with and be sane. That's not a solution, right? You say you wanted to give everyone a choice on whether to have these powers or not, but you've given over a level of control. You've given over a vaccine that can be used as a weapon, and it would be great if everybody made decisions based on the greater good, which would include both humankind and mutantkind. But that's not what will happen, right? The powers that be, the people in charge, the ones that make the decisions, the ones that may harbor prejudice, they're the ones that are going to make the decisions for everyone. And so in that way, Victor has shackled them. He has given them, in trying to give mutants more freedom, freedom of choice, give children freedom of choice to choose whether to take the chance or take the risk of becoming a mutant that's that doesn't blend in with the rest of society in attempting to give that freedom to kids that have the gene, he's really locked them away in a way, right? Whether that's lock them in a way in a place where they don't get to make the choice on their own because they're forced to take the vaccine, or whether they're locked away in terms of there will be much fewer mutants now, and so the ones that are there will be locked in a worse existence, a world that is less tolerant, because all of a sudden mutants have become even more of a minority and thus even more persecuted. And you, again, you can draw so many parallels into what's the possibility with the X gene vaccine and the same choice that Nate Gray is making here. And he's blind to it. He's blind to the fact that he, in attempting to make a better world, a world of peace for humankind and mutant kind, he's taken away the freedom of choice, not only from humans, but also from mutants. It's his way or the highway, and no matter what the utopia outcome of whatever world he builds, to me, the price is too high. To take away freedom of choice from all living beings and create a future that is only what you believe to be right, rather than the natural evolution of the species of human and mutant, and to see what evolves, it's not worth that. The ends do not justify the means, in my opinion. It's fine if you get to a utopia someday, if there's some perfect utopian society and the people living in that society don't have to suffer due to any conflict between humankind and mutant kind. That's great. I'm all for that in terms of the story. And I think most people living in that society would. But the problem is, it's the same problem you see with, the biggest parallel I can draw is Toyo Harada in the Valiant Comics universe, you know, where he's trying to create a utopia where Psyots and humans can live together. And he's willing to kill to have that happen. He's willing to have wars to have that happen, because in his mind, the ends justify the means. And I've talked ad infinitum about that concept. And yeah, it's great if you're one of the people that comes out on the other side. Then the price is not too high, because now you live in this perfect society and there's no hunger and no disease and no starvation and no wars and conflicts. That's perfect for you. That's great. But what about the price that the people who died paid? I guarantee you that those people are going to say the price is too high, because and what price do you have to pay, and when do you draw the line? 50 people, 100 people, 1,000 people, 10,000 people, 100,000 people, 1,000,000 people? Again, is it just whatever the greater good is? So what if you divide the population of the planet exactly in half, and then you take one from one side and put that person on the other side? Now that's the majority, right? It's 50% plus one. It's now the majority, and you kill off the other. You kill off the 50% minus one. You've given utopia to the greater number of people. You have satisfied that condition, so that must be okay, right? Imagine a perfect world, but every other person you know is dead, right? Every second person you know. So you have a friend on either side of you, one is gone. Or actually, it's just you and one friend, right? And they're gone, and you survived. Then it's great for you. You feel like, yeah, I miss those people, but I live in a perfect society, so I guess it's okay. Well, I guarantee the half of the people that aren't alive anymore, it wasn't worth it for them. The price was too high to pay. And what makes any one of us worthy of surviving and living over any other person? It's the most selfish choice you can make, right? And the X-Men are not about that. I talked recently in a Spotlight episode. I think it was when I was talking about Uncanny X-Men issue number 8, actually. I talked about the fact that sacrifice, that concept of sacrifice, self-sacrifice, has been at the core of who the X-Men are since the beginning of the concept of the characters. So what X-Man is doing here is so antithetical to the whole idea of who the X-Men are. And it kind of goes to show you that he never really understood what it meant to be an X-Man, and he still doesn't understand what it means to be an X-Man. You cannot make this choice for the entire planet. It's wrong. It's subverting free will. And I don't know that there's a more kind of evil thing that you can do. It's kind of like murder in a way. You know, when you murder someone, you're taking away their freedom to live. You're taking away their freedom to make any future choices. You are deciding for them that their life ends now. And I don't know that anyone would argue that murder is not evil. I think that's a pretty universal concept in our society, that murder is evil. And in a way, X-Man is choosing to murder the entire planet because he's taking away our free will. He's willing to take away the choice and the freedom of all mutant kind and all humankind and substitute his own judgment and his own decisions for us. And in that way, he could be one of the most evil X-Men villains of all time, which is interesting to think about because I always liked Nate Gray as a character. But unfortunately, with him deciding to make these choices, you know, similar to the choices Apocalypse has always been trying to make to rule the world and to take away choices and to substitute his judgment for ours. But the thing is, Nate Gray has the power to do it. He almost had the power to do it, looked like he had the power to do it on his own, and the X-Men weren't going to be able to stop him, and maybe Legion was going to be able to stop him. But now that he's taken over Legion's body and abilities, he really does seem unstoppable at this point. And he's going to become, maybe go down as the worst X-Men villain ever. So one issue to go. Not sure how it's all going to play out, but I'm definitely in for the finale, and I can't wait to see the consequences. Obviously, we've seen solicits and everything for the age of X-Man, which I take it to be this new reality that Nate Gray is going to create, and it'll be interesting to see what that reality looks like and what the ramifications of all these events are, what the long-term consequences of the X-Men disassembled storyline are, and also will we get any really interesting new characters that sort of survive the reversion, because you know that the age of X-Man is not going to persist forever, right? We're going to go back to status quo because it's comics, and eventually the X-Men will find a way, because that's comics and that's just the way it's going to be. But just like Nate Gray himself survived the Age of Apocalypse storyline, and we ended up getting a new character out of that, we got Dark Beast, a few others. Will we get any new characters in the Age of X-Man event that are so popular or so interesting that they survive the event? They start showing up in the Prime universe. That'll be interesting to see. So I think that's going to do it for this episode. As always, I want to thank everybody for joining. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever your favorite podcast app is. The rating really helps with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.